morning in 1942. Her mother was blessed with a son who grew up to be young, gifted and brown, with the strength to tear a mountain down, with a voice so young and clear, a chance for everyone to hear. Yeah,
young, gifted and brown.
And as he grew up,
the Filipino-American National News is proud to have on the show Guru Dan Enesanto. First, I want to thank Dan Fay and the Minnesota Colleague Group for helping us set up this interview with Guru Dan Enesanto.
Thank you.
For our listeners that are not familiar with your history, you grew up in Stockton, California?
Yes, sir. 1936, I was born and raised in Stockton, California.
And how did you initially get involved in martial arts?
My uncle, my father housed a lot of Filipino families during the Depression. So I remember he was like a three-story house. This segregation guy gave him a house and he built it. So during the Depression, he housed over, it's got to be close to over 100 Filipinos because there was no place. It's sort of like what's happening now with people living out of but so he housed a lot of the Filipinos in Stockton, California. And at that time, Stockton was the biggest Filipino population in the United States at that time.
And from what I know about you, not only are you well-versed in martial arts, but you were quite the athlete growing up. Not a bad football player, not a bad track athlete. How was that being an Asian-American athlete in that time period?
In that time period, a lot of the Filipinos that preceded me were very good athletes. And I had my idols, and so Julius Sampson was one. He played in for the local team. And so I just followed Leo Carrito, people like that, Hamilton Barilla. They were, and a lot of good boxers came from that time period. So like Jimmy Florido, who was a number one contender in the world when Juan Zubita was world champion. So the boxing and sport thing is very popular with the Filipinos. It's a different time period. I grew up near Little Manila, yes, in 30, so you could find almost every type of Filipino ethnic group that you can find, from Tagalog, Visayan, Ilocano, Pangasinan, Papagayo, you name it, it was there. Few Islamic, but mainly those particular groups. So we just grew up in that neighborhood. We were right next to Nihonmachi, this Japanese town, and Chinatown, and then Little Manila, and then Hispanic was here. And It was just, that's the south side of Stockton. So we kind of knew each other's culture. And so I learned a lot from the older generation at that time period.
And for our listeners and viewers that are not familiar with the Filipino martial arts, what are the different forms? I know that there are Kali, RNS, how are they, the disciplines differentiated?
Most of the terms they use in the Philippines are like Eskrima and RNS, or what they call RNS Limao, or they call it Estacado. I use Kali because of Grandmaster Flora Villarreal, who was the champion at the time, during that time period when they were trying to display the Filipino martial arts. So under Murphy, Frank, I think it's Frank Murphy, the I want to say 32nd Governor General of the Philippines, he wanted. So he told me to use Kali. He said, don't use Eskrima because Eskrima is Spanish. And he said, don't use Arnes because Arnes is Spanish. And because I had such a admiration for him, I used it right away. I stopped using. And it was my father's thing when I wrote my book. He says, if you call it Arnes, you're going to get some of your Arnes teachers. If you call it Eskrima, you're going to get some of the Eskrima people. You call it Kali because these guys are very, what's the word I want, very into their own culture, from Ilocanos to Pangasinan, Pampanga. And he says, just call it FMA. So my mother and father says, use FMA, Filipino Martial Arts. And that's why I chose it for the first book I wrote. That way, hopefully, no one was insulted. Because some people were very adamant about it. It's Arnes, it's Eskrima, Estacado. They have so many different names for it at that time.
And from what we saw, we got to the seminar towards the tail end, but we saw quite a diversity of people from many different ethnic groups. From what I know of like early martial arts in the United States scene is that, like this, for instance, the Chinese were very particular of only teaching within the Chinese. How were you able to get such a great understanding of all these different disciplines besides the Filipino martial arts?
Because of the open-mindedness of a lot of my Filipino instructors, plus the fact being a student at Bruce Lee, he drew from many sources. He had an appreciation for different Chinese martial arts, different appreciation for Filipino martial arts. And he investigated everything from Korean to Okinawan to Kempo. And then I like to think he took the best from each, and he called it by his name, Jeet Kune Do. But that's one of the reasons why, because of his open-mindedness, and he would introduce something like French Savant, we would get or Burmese boxing, he liked the headbutts, and so he incorporated into his own system. But like he told me, what I like doesn't necessarily mean what you're going to use, because you have to tailor-make the system for yourself and individualizing it. And mostly the Filipino population is very cosmopolitan, at least my generation was. We appreciate things from the Asian. We can appreciate things that come more or less from the Caucasian, European. So because of they're kind of the melting pot, at least with my father, they're the melting pot of Southeast Asia. I don't think there is a country that has a Northern European culture to the American, Southern European culture to the Spanish, Northern Asian culture to the Chinese, and Southern Asian culture to the Indian, so there's very few. Plus the fact there's a strong Arabic influence in the Philippines that came from the bombing. So those groups, so they're really kind of a cosmopolitan race. That's the way my father brought me up.
And from what I've heard from listening to you is that you are very big on, when you learn that these disciplines, is a way of learning about culture, whether
right.
Music or food. Why do you think that martial arts was such a great mechanism for people to learn about cultures?
I think we appreciate other cultures to maybe their food, maybe to their music, maybe to the fashions, maybe through their physical activities. And I think that's what attracted me to the Philippines. I didn't even know they had an art until my father said, no, watch, this is an art. They don't publicize it much. And it was very secretive in my days. And it's a kind of a neatness, their openness. They talk outside the Filipino race, they just had to eat Filipino food. That's the thing. It didn't matter if they were Caucasian or Hispanic or African American. If they were close to the family, they taught it. It's a time period when it wasn't commercialized. And when I first taught, I had at least easily 12 people dictating what I would say and how to present it. In fact, when I first started, they said, you will only teach military, you will teach law enforcement, and close friends of friends. And if they're close friends of friends, make sure that their character is good. Because what I'm showing you is very dangerous. it's blade and stick, because it deals with weapon before they go into empty hands, you know. So that's why they were very, at least with me, they were very strict. And they were much older than me in age, so I listened closely, because my father says, listen to them because they're much older than you. And at that time, they're struggling for acceptance in America. So it was, for them, it's very important who they shared it with. I found out later on through my father, he says, you want to share it because people appreciate something. You appreciate the culture through their food, through their fashion, through their music, through the dances, through their architectural feasts. I'm saying that's important that you display the best. In my generation, they said, don't you embarrass us? I remember one time, he says, because you represent the south side of Stockton, you represent the Filipino people, and you represent me, you represent the Trinity Presbyterian Church. And he went on and on and on, because it was so important to be accepted in our days, you know. When I think about it, it's so much better. The people that preceded me had it tougher than I did, because they had to go through acceptance. When I played, I don't know if they're tackling me in football because of the color of my skin or the color of my jersey. I kind of know when you're fully accepted. When they get off you, when they tackle you, a little elbow on me. But if you like something so much, you put up with it.
And just a reminder, listeners, we have Guru Daniel Nisanto, who is in town with the Minnesota Kali Group for a few seminars this past weekend. Some of the major influences that I know in your martial arts journey is your uncle, Ed Parker, and you spoke earlier of Bruce Lee. What sort of impact did these three people have on yourself?
I appreciate them because they were pushing a culture. And I think that's up to something with Lacoste, it was the same way, who's pushing the culture. And I think that's what attracted me to Bruce Lee, because Bruce Lee especially, because Bruce Lee is very international. You know, he used to tell me, you're going to be proud of your Filipino heritage. And then I was so surprised that he liked some of the things in the Filipino martial art, because he said, this is good. He kind of embraces everything that, if it worked and if it's functional, and he said it should be appreciated. So I think from that, Bruce Lee and Ben Lagusa, La Costa, Illustrismo, those people paved the way for me, because I saw their movement, and they were so exact in their art, and no one knew what it is. They didn't know how to commercialize it, though, because there's no belts. People like belts. And the Filipinos didn't have belts at that time. So they didn't have a uniform. They didn't fully understand it. They had the skill, but they didn't have what I call the promotional thing to push it to the people. I mean, this was very, very secret. I remember when they used to practice in the camps, but they would shoo the younger generation away. But we kind of knew what was going on, you know. And it didn't, right now, at that time, we didn't have an appreciation, because I mean, I think we were, when you're in the third grade and fourth grade, fifth grade, you don't have, I've watched them cut the asparagus. That was a time period when you can have a college education, you can work the fields. That's why they were called the cicadas. It didn't matter. I've been the people who had a master's degree in sociology and psychology, but they're working in the same field, and I'm doing it for spending money for my high school, so, you know, from the summer. So those people really, I admire that generation a lot. And so anytime, like my role model was Vicky Draves. She was called Vicky Manalo. She's 1948, she won the high board champion and the tower jumping. Before, the two were different. So she won two gold medals. And I remember they pooped the horn in Little Manila, and they said, "This Vicky Manalo she wasn't Vicky Draves yet. Yeah. Vicky Manalo just took two gold medals in the Olympic Games." So they were, the whole community pooped the horns and stuff like that. So in that generation, we backed that up. My aunt's kind of a big hero. She's the first Filipino teacher in the state of California. It doesn't seem like much, because there's so many nurses, so many Filipino nurses and so many Filipino teachers now. But at that time, that was very, very rare. So my mother always made my Aunt Flora kind of a role model for me that can be done. because she had a very difficult time at that time period. She couldn't get a job, so that's why they went to the Philippines. And they had this guy, he was I can't remember, he was a Hollywood guy, and he really liked my aunt and uncle. And so after World War II, they didn't have enough money, so he was Dracula, I think, and he brought them back, he paid for them. And then she became the, right after that, she applied but couldn't get a job, and then she became the first Filipino teacher in the state of California. In fact, they named a school after her, in Stockton, California. So that was my role model, my aunt.
And with modern day martial arts and film nowadays, you see more of an acceptance or more, as a Filipino, it's heightened because when we see some form of it, we notice it. Why do you think in such movies like the Fast and Furious series, John Wick, you did some work with Rob Schneider in Big Stan, why do you think Filipino martial arts has in such demand in these type of films?
It has a composite. It's a composite of different cultures. If you take Dr. Jose Rizal, he's 1/4 Chinese, he's 1/4 Japanese, he's 1/4 Spanish, and he's 1/4 India, which means really a mixture, a Malay mixture. So he's a typical of different cultures. My father could give me a lecture. He says, there's not just one group. That's why sometimes there was a rivalry in the older days between the different ethnic groups of the Philippines. It was so that sometimes it got so bad that if you were, one father goes, well, you can marry any race, but don't you marry an Ilocano girl. And I was like, that part I don't understand, because they're both Filipinos. They were very open to other races, but sometimes their own, because that's the old culture, because they're trying to get ahead, you know. But things have changed now. I think the groups now are very Americanized, but in my generation, it was something different, you know.
I heard in terms of your work within the Hollywood circles that you trained with the likes of, I guess at the time, Lew Alcindor, Steve McQueen, I've heard Denzel Washington, Rob Schneider. If these guys continued with the discipline, how well would they have their skill have gotten if they continued?
Excuse me, one more time.
So you've trained a few celebrities or noted people in the time. What set them apart when they picked up
students, right? Like Jeff Amato, he's American-born Japanese. He put it in many pictures. So it's a kind of the art itself is kind of versatile, because you can throw it almost in any time period, and you can give it to almost any culture. Right? Like even sometimes the bottle song, if they, because of the picture, they put it, sometimes what ethnic group is, they just use it and mm-hmm. call it and give it a different name. So sometimes it didn't get its credit. And I think that's what, because it's very functional, you can create, it's very easy to be creative because of motion. Everything has to follow the pattern, right? Even the boxing is based off the knife. My cousin Ray was a Golden Glove champion, right? But Stockton had a lot of good Filipino boxers. Jimmy Ferreira, and our generation was like the Gusum brothers, they call them Dugason. Maxie Dugason was like, I think one time, 66 wins, no losses. And then he couldn't get fights. And then later on, because he's weaker than them, you had Bernard Dugason, he fought Richard Ray Robinson. So they're really good at the boxing. The boxing was it's twofold. They even represented, because when the Americans came, they brought the Buffalo Soldiers. So the Buffalo Soldiers taught the Filipinos. They added to their own Panatukan. So the Panatukan, and then the also third element was the Navy. And then Filipinos added to their own knife weight, because basically, it's the same. If you jab here, uppercut, it's the same thing when you dunga. So it's very merged into one. But they don't know where it's from, because it's one generation, they leave out the history. That's why they don't know how to end. So each group sort of borrowed from each group. And that became what we call now as Western boxing. And they've adapted. You know, Filipino practice in my days was hot dogs, scrambled eggs and rice, or bugong, rice and chicken, or fish. So they drew from many different cultures. They drew a lot from, obviously, from the Spanish. So it's a composite already different ethnic groups that came in the Philippines.
And as you spoke of earlier, your dad's a very proud Filipino man. I see that you have a few children, and it seems like your daughter, Diane, has made quite an impact in her own right in the martial arts world.
The Mandalorian.
Plus other things. Seeing the success of your daughter in FMA and stuff like that, how does that make you feel as a father?
Oh, pretty good. I'm glad she embraced it. She's pretty sharp in that respect.
Guru Dan, what keeps you motivated to this day to still keep on teaching the arts?
I like teaching the art. I think it's a good form of exercise. It doesn't have to be combined. It's very good for restorative. I think it's really restorative art. You know, you don't have to make it for violence. When you learn motion very, very quickly. So it's sort of like what I call Indian clubs, because you're getting your full workout when you write the stick, and then you have the stick and the eye, and it teaches you close range. I think I missed your question, but I think for me it attracted because of the culture, and they never sometimes separate the rhythm. So it's kind of fun because they traditionally calling like the Villarreal clan, they play their drums, which motivates. It's like dancing; it motivates them to move. Nowadays they've taken out the drumming up, but traditionally somebody hit the drum and you train to the drums. Southern Philippines, they train to the gong. Even in ancient times, they used to go into battle, thick fog, and the ships would play this gong, which kind of mesmerizing to the people that came into the islands, you know.
I think we've reached pretty much all the questions we have, Eric. Do you have any questions yourself or?
No. I could listen to them all day.
That's just what we just did.
And once again, that is a living legend, legendary martial artist, Guru Dan Anasanto. The Filipino American National News would like to thank the Minnesota Kali Group, led by Guru Rick Fay. I misspoke in the nervousness and called him Dan Fay, similar to Guru Dan Anasanto, and also Colton Mullerud, who helped in getting this interview with Guru Anasanto, who had a seminar a few weeks back, a two-day seminar over at the Rec Center at the University of Minnesota. Hopefully in the future we can hear back from Guru Dan Anasanto, who is very... It was such an unbelievable experience. I mean, he was very loquacious. He's sharp as a tack. He's 86 years old. There were some questions that escaped my mind. I was so mesmerized, myself and former co-host Eric Asuncion, who did the videography for the interview. So thank you, Eric, for helping out with our interview with Guru Dan Anasanto. A question I didn't get to, and hopefully we'll have another chance to speak with Guru Anasanto, is that in 1978, the Dallas Cowboys won the Super Bowl, but leading up to it, their strength coach, Burt Ward, who was a college roommate or college friend of Dan Anasanto, had him help out the linemen or help out the team in regards to different techniques in terms of strength and conditioning. Use some of the sticks work in Filipino martial arts as a way of showing different leverage that players could use on their opponents. But for right now, we are going to play a song from the group Native Elements, and the name of this track is entitled Love, Peace, Unity.
Listen up, people. This song here is a message. You want peace? You have to think peacefully. So put your weapons down. Stop the fighting. Come follow up. Element. Break it down. day I picture with no war. Well, I'll be playing together, be no score. Brothers helping brothers, hand in hand. It's Jah's will, you know it's Jah's plan. Now we can't tap in, no, no, with no hand. To be at peace within yourself. Stop right here with you and me. We'll be together as one family. With love, peace, unity in the sunshine. Ooh, yeah. The love, peace, unity in the sunshine. Picture with no pain, no more suffering people, no more shame. Unity is what we achieve. Our destination is what we believe. Now we can't tap in, no, no, with no hand. You need to be at peace within yourself. So stop right here. With you and me, we'll be together as one family. With love, peace, unity in the sunshine. Ooh, yeah. The love, peace, unity in the sunshine. Oh. No, no, with no hand. You need to be at peace within yourself. So stop right here with you and me. We'll be together as one family. With love, peace.
With their track Love, Peace, Unity. And we do have time for one quick announcement. Next Saturday, the Philippine Student Association at the University of Minnesota will be having their annual Philippine Cultural Night at the Memorial Union's Great Hall. Doors open at 6 and the show runs through 9 p.m. Thank you for listening to the Filipino American National News. Stay tuned for sound effects.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul.